ESPN College Football Podcast.
All right, if today's edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast proves anything, it's that this sport does not require games to have a podcast, to have a big story. It is a 12-month-a-year endeavor, and we've got a lot of ground to cover here. Matt Schick, along with my good friends, Tom Van Haren and Adam Rittenberg. Tom, the news never stops. College football never sleeps. We got some big stuff to tackle here.
I never sleep. There's no sleep for anybody. I mean, signing day hits, news from Michigan hits, it's snowing outside, our pets' heads are falling off. There's a lot happening.
That was a good Dumb and Dumber reference. I think, Adam, we have 10 kids combined among us here. So yeah. This is good. This is a good vacation here. It's called work.
That's right. And that's really why we don't sleep. But my day began with shoveling snow. I'm now in the beautiful sunshine of Southern California. Jim Harbaugh has interviewed. He has now returned to Michigan. A bunch of kids have signed. Jimbo got mad. A lot happened today. This is perfectly timed.
You summed it up. I don't think we have to talk about it anymore. Thanks for listening here on the ESPN College Football Podcast. We'll see you tomorrow.
We can move this into our lifelong goal of just having a dad podcast, the dad pod, right?
Listen, Adam did what I do, which is move you ahead in the action due to time constraints. He tackled everything. Right there. Let's dive right into that, where as we're recording this, literally 10 minutes before we started recording, Adam Schefter reports that Jim Harbaugh, after interviewing with Minnesota, the Vikings, has informed Ward Manuel, the athletic director at Michigan, that he is coming back to the Wolverines. It was odd that he interviewed on Wednesday, which was signing day. But Tom, as you and I talked about earlier today on our National Signing Day show, it was more of a Wednesday than a signing day for Michigan. They weren't signing anybody. They signed everyone back in for this class back in December, but the optics of it weren't great. And now he's coming back, which, according to Schefter, people in Michigan are elated, and they should be based on last season. But what's the level of awkward here going back after this tap dance?
Yeah, it's like George Costanza trying to act like he wasn't fired, right? In the Seinfeld episode.
Keep showing up.
Work. Yeah. Nothing happened. What are you talking about? There are some people that are related at Michigan. I think there are some people that are going to have some questions that they want answered though. And Adam Schefter reported as well that Jim Harbaugh told Ward Manuel that this is not going to be a recurring thing that's going to happen where he's going to flirt with the NFL. And if he's going to address that with the team and the coaches, which I think probably needs to be addressed, maybe that goes a long way, but I know that in Adam Rittenberg on the podcast, not to be confused with Schefter, which I did when Adam Schefter's email came through, I was like, oh, hey, good for Adam for getting that. That was great.
Good job. It's a Ritt bomb. All right.
There's too many Adams, but no, Adam Rittenberg has talked to quite a few people at Michigan. I know too. And from the people that we've talked to and sharing information, I know that there are some people there that were throughout this whole process wondering what was going to happen. And if he leaves, what does that mean for them? And now they went through this whole process and he's coming back. I think some of the players, especially there needs to be some conversations there of what this looks like going forward. And maybe some trust built back up with them as well.
Yeah. I think that, you know, there was definitely an expectation going into today that Jim Harbaugh would not return at Michigan, that he was going to go on and get this job. I think that was the feeling earlier this week in Schembechler Hall. That was the feeling when he went up to Minnesota to begin the interview process. And then we just don't know what happened in that room. But I think what Tom and I have heard from multiple people in and around Michigan is that, you know, his NFL interest was real and he found a dance partner. Maybe not the one that we thought it would be. It wasn't the Raiders. It wasn't the Bears. It was the Vikings. And after dancing, they decided to go their separate ways and who really rebuffed whom. So that's, I guess, the thing that I'm most interested in. But and then also just the return, how that's going to be. How will Michigan fans receive him? What will happen with the contract that was offered to him, which he, you know, didn't agree to yet, but soon will in some form. So there's a lot of these, again, unanswered questions about, and certainly the part about is the NFL door closed for good? I have a hard time believing that, but maybe Harbaugh at what, 57 years old, you know, took this opportunity and decided, you know what, I'm not going to do this every year, which would certainly be welcome to Michigan because they've been dealing with this every year. And certainly this year it was the most intense, at least that they've had to handle here the last few days.
And Matt, to what Adam was saying about the NFL and closing the door, I think what we had heard too throughout this process was a lot of people told us that Jim Harbaugh wants to win a Super Bowl. And that part of it was real, that he had an itch to scratch, that he wanted to win a Super Bowl. And so I agree with Adam that if the door really is closed, and if Jim Harbaugh addresses that with the team, with the staff, and with everybody there at Michigan and said, listen, I'm not going to flirt again. I'm not going to go back and do this again. Even if somebody calls, I'm not going to show interest, then fine. But I think we have to see that happen before we can believe it. Because what if next season there is a great opportunity and a team comes and says, we want you to be the coach. What happens then? If he shows them that's true, then I think it's a different story. And maybe they just have to get to that point.
Yeah, it's easy to say now, okay, I'm done. It's like in December declaring I'm not going to golf in the spring. Well, then the sun comes down. It's like, okay, all right, here we go. Time to dust the clubs off and get out there. I mean, it's a hard thing to do. Now we all have many kids. We don't golf. But the point being, yeah, I get that. It's going to be a little awkward. But with Jim Harbaugh too, you know, it was awkward last year. Like he
it's
took the,
awkward.
But it's always hard with Jim. I get that. He's quirky. But he took the pay cut last year. It was a bad season amidst COVID last year. You could argue he was lame duck last year going into this year. But you know what fixed it? Beating Ohio State and winning games. So we can talk all day long about, hey, Jim Harbaugh, are they going to use it negative recruiting? Of course they will. They probably used it last year. But if you win games, kids will sign up and play for you. And they had their best season in 25 years and they had a top 10 recruiting class. Those things are connected and kids probably committed inside knowing that there might be an NFL thing in the background. Tom, you talk to recruits. They've known this for a while. Their parents have.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say is the interesting part about this is other teams are going to use this, like you said, in the future against Michigan and they have already. But if you take the approach that Jim Harbaugh did, he was open and honest with a lot of these recruits and their parents about the interest that he did have. It's hard to recruit against that because if you know that it's happening and the coach is being honest with you and saying, yeah, I have interest. Will Johnson's dad, Will Johnson was the second highest rated commit in this class for Michigan. He's already an early enrollee. His dad, Dion, played for Michigan. And his dad told me that he's heard rumors back to December that Jim Harbaugh was thinking about interest in the NFL and maybe some teams were going to come after him. And he said they had conversations with Harbaugh about it. And he was open and honest with them about it and said that, yeah, I'm interested. I'm going to see what happens and we'll go from there. And so if you have that approach and you're still signing recruits and you're having a smooth signing day the way they did in December, I think that says a lot about the health of the program right now and how programs view Michigan at this point.
I wonder how Michigan fans are feeling. I wonder how the staff is feeling. I wonder how the administration is really feeling. And I don't think this is something that they won't be able to like get past eventually, but I don't know if we can also chalk this up to just Jim being Jim and, you know, he was transparent about the NFL. I mean, this program, again, Tom and I were talking to people throughout the week, you know, there were words like, or terms like, you know, we don't know what to do. We don't have a schedule. We are not motivated to recruit. I mean, these are all things that, again, because you don't know what's happening. There's
a lack of trust now, maybe that needs to be repaired in the staff, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, and just in general, I mean, Michigan was ready to move forward. Michigan did not, at least from the people I talked to, you know, and certainly the Vikings had a different perspective, maybe on the whole process. But from the Michigan side, they did not think he was coming back from the folks I talked to. And so how do you shift that mindset to maybe now he's coming back for good and he's never going to leave you know, he'll finish his career there. I'm very interested to see how that process goes because everything with this coach and this school is not normal. It's not standard. And while there are some elements of this week that are, you know, not unlike what we've seen, you know, maybe at Oklahoma or Notre Dame or pick a place where a coach is, there are some that are very much distinctive to Harbaugh and to Michigan. And I think how that evolves from here is going to be really interesting. One thing that, again, Tom and I have been told, the staff is not going to be together like tomorrow. It's not like that, unless there's a surprise, they're not having a staff meeting tomorrow. The staff has been dismissed for a little while. And so, you know, they're getting the news wherever they are, whether they're at home or on vacation. And then at some point they'll come back together and we're all in for the 2022 season in Michigan.
The bar has been raised there at Michigan. There's no question about it. Very successful season last year. And you're right. Jim Harbaugh is a very interesting guy, and we'll see how this works out. You win games, people put up with this stuff, right? They'll put up with the little dance here and there. But again, follow up last season with another good season. Keep going. He said it's the beginning, not the end. We'll see what happens coming up. Certainly not the end of his tenure at Michigan, Tom.
Well, and that's the interesting part of something that Adam and I have been talking about, is they have holes to fill on the roster that this whole time they really haven't been doing a lot to fill. And now they won this year, but you're losing Aiden Hutchinson. You're losing David Ajabo. You're losing Josh Ross. Mike McDonald, the defensive coordinator. A lot on that defense is gone. And I think that's a big deal. You know, and how do you replace that talent? They had a really good recruiting class this year. They had a good class last year as well. But there's still a lot that we don't know that's going to happen. If it goes backwards,
right?
Then what's the thought? And then what's the feeling and vibe around the program?
Yeah. Did you hand in some equity with this tap dance? Did you hand in some of that you built up here? This season, what they just had is what Ohio State expects. That's the standard, what they have every year. What Michigan just did, again, have won 12 games in 25 years, right? So this is, we'll see if they can chase this with another good season. But Jim Harbaugh is back with Michigan. We did have, again, that announcement came the night of the first day of the late signing period. Signing day in February used to be big, right? 10 hours of live coverage we do on ESPNU or ESPN2 back in the day. We just had an hour-long show on Wednesday. Myself, Tom Lugamill, Pete Thamel, Sam Macho, Tom Van Haren.
Name job.
February, Adam Rittenberg was too busy. It's our fault. But we just finished this late signing period, just about. And around 90% of the prospects signed back in December. So we'll get to some of the names to know that signed today. But Texas A&M signs the number one class. They're going to finish number one. They added defensive end Shamar Stewart on Wednesday. They added Jacoby Matthews, a safety out of Louisiana. That was a big get. Four five-stars are now in this class, this number one class. 13 commits ranked in the top five at their position. Walter Nolan, number one overall player. You could argue it's the best recruiting class since sliced bread. More on that coming. But how much of a role did the new name, image, and likeness rules, or lack thereof, play in this recruiting class? Lane Kiffin, the head coach of Ole Miss, according to him, it played a role. Let's play it.
You know, we don't have the same, you know, funding resources as some of these schools do, you know, for these NIL deals. And so it's basically dealing with different salary caps. We now have a sport that has completely different salary caps. And some of these schools are, you know, whatever, 5-10 times more than everybody else of what they can pay the players. So I know nobody uses those phrases, but that is what it is. So I joked the other day, I didn't know if Texas A&M was going to incur a luxury tax, you know, and how much they paid for their signing class.
Salary cap, luxury tax, Texas A&M. Just incredible soundbite there from Lane Kiffin. All right, we'll react to that in a minute. Nick Saban, during his news conference, or he talked to the media the other day, he said, when we start using name, image, and likeness for a kid to come to our school, that's where I draw the line, because that's not why we did this. Okay. End of quote. So Kirby Smart has opined on it, but no one has gone as direct as Lane Kiffin toward Texas A&M. Jimbo Fisher, you'll be shocked to know, the A&M head coach, took offense to what was said there and to some of these reports, like that was on a brobible.com sliced bread. We'll get into that in a little bit. But administrators, coaches, message board trolls, he responded to all of them on Wednesday.
Here's what I'm going to say, and this is point blank. This is point blank to the, because here's my problem.
There is no $30 million fund. There is no $5 million. There is no $10 million. This is garbage, okay? And it does. It pisses me off that people, and here it comes from a site called Bro Bible by a guy named Slice Bread. Then everybody runs with it. So it's written on the internet as gospel. How irresponsible is that? And all these, and we got writers who have said it and done it off Slice Bread. A guy named Slice, who made it up. Love to see who Slice Bread is and put it out there with Slice Bread. Let me find out where it comes from. And then to have coaches in our league and across this league to say it, clown acts. All right? Irresponsible as hell. Multiple coaches in our league. And the guy's griping about NIL, griping about transfer portal, using it the most and bragging about it the most. That's the ironic part. You want character? I'll take it with any of y'all. It's a joke. It does piss me off. The other thing, when you look at vice president, I get another one. Vice president of Notre Dame. Supposed to be a Rutgers University, right? That's a heck of a person leading a Rutgers University. I'd be real proud if I hired that guy. Read it off sliced bread. But they say it because it's written on the internet. We worry about the kids and social media and internet. How about grown-ups? How about the guys that are supposed to be setting an example? How about writers who are supposed to be writing the right thing? How about coaches who are supposed to be doing the right thing? And I'll tell you what, I know how some of those guys recruit too. Go dig into that. I know the history. I know the tradition. I know things. Trust me, you don't want to go down that avenue.
Jimbo Fisher, may I just tell you and just pause and sit here for a moment to tell you how much I love this sport and how much I love stories like this. Before we get into this, do we want to get into this? He mentioned sliced bread a few times. Are you guys familiar with sliced bread? Not what you serve your kids at PBJ, but the handle of the VIP in this message board that tweeted, that put this thing out there, that the Notre Dame VP tweeted out back in January?
I'm not familiar with sliced bread. I did not know. I don't know if this is a derivative of Sir Yacht, who was breaking all the really realignment Big Ten return to play news. So I mean, it is a great handle, though. I mean, the fact that you have Jimbo Fisher, $75 million coach, talking about sliced bread on Bro Bible and some Notre Dame VP who retweeted it. I mean, that's why it's the greatest sport.
It's so good. Let me just read you. He brought up the sliced bread. He brought up Bro Bible. Am I allowed to read what the sliced bread said that was tweeted out? This was tweeted out by Notre Dame's VP, tweeted the link in January. That's who he's referring to there. That's not sliced bread, but the VP tweeted out sliced bread. There's a lot of stuff going on.
What if it is sliced bread?
Maybe the VP is sliced bread, right? Here's what it said. This is a VIP in this message board for Texas A&M or something. Again, it's sliced bread. Bro Bible. Okay, tweeted it out. It says, he wrote this. To answer the question, the number I've heard is between $25 and $30 million. That was as of first signing day. We're nowhere near prepared to dish out that kind of money. A&M's donors were extremely coordinated. The coaching staff would identify players they wanted, relay those to the point donor, and then that individual would work with various other donors to build an LLC that would sponsor the targeted player. And if you're hoping they'll just jump in the portal after year one, they're a step ahead there too. They structured each player's deal as a multi-year contract. Leave A&M and you leave money behind. That was put out into the ether by some fan who's not a fan of Texas A&M, obviously. It goes by the handle sliced bread. That was aggregated. Jimbo Fisher responded to it. What do we make of all this, Tom Van Haren?
First of all, it's not lost on me that Jimbo was talking about Bro Bible and then got mad and said, people are taking this as gospel. I mean, great play on words by him there. Bible and the gospel. That was beautiful. Second, if you're sliced bread, your credibility is just completely shredded after today, right? Like, I mean, I kind of feel bad for sliced bread. His credibility is gone. The next post that he makes on there, who's going to believe sliced bread?
Tell you what, sliced bread's brand has never been bigger. Okay.
I mean, never. Yeah.
That was a great day for him.
Absolutely. But with this whole thing, the point that Jimbo Fisher was making, and it wasn't in that soundbite, he said Alabama Bryce Young had an $800,000 deal. When that happened, it was great. Now it happens with him, and he gets a good recruiting class, and it's not great. And all this stuff, NIL is above the board now. It's above the table. It's not supposed to be used as a recruiting tool to entice prospects to your school, but any NIL deal that, that comes up is going to entice recruits. I mean, Texas, they have a fund set up for all their offensive linemen. If you're an offensive lineman in Texas, you get $50,000. That you don't have to use that as a recruiting tool. It's a recruiting tool. If you're an offensive lineman, that's naturally going to at first attract you to Texas. And they just happen to sign four ESPN 300 offensive linemen in this class. So I agree with the sentiment that he has with this, that he happens to get the number one class. He happens to get a bunch of five-star kids, and everybody's piling on to him when they're all doing the exact same thing that he's doing. They just didn't get the results he did.
The irony in this is that it was another Ole Miss coach, Hugh Freeze, back in the day, who tweeted out saying, hey, if you've heard of anything nefarious, send it my way, you know, that whole thing. And now it's the current Ole Miss head coach, Lane Kiffin, saying, accusing some shady things of going on. Look, the reason Jimbo Fisher's denying it is because I don't know whether it's true or not. I mean, I don't know if you believe him or not, but the point is, college coaches always have had plausible deniability about all this stuff. He may not know anything that's going on. There might be something going on. He might not know about it, right? But there's only really one or two rules with this NIL stuff, which is you can't use it as enticements to recruits, and schools cannot be involved in it. So what happens? Corporations, collectives, outside entities, exchanges that some universities are talking about that technically have no legal connection or binding arrangement with these universities, but they set up, they help them out. It's like a booster. You know, the boosters used to pay, you know, go to the waterfalls and the facilities. Now it's going to these collectives and recruits. And the NCAA dug their heels in, went to the courtroom, said, we don't want NIL. And instead of being proactive, now we've got this, and this is the way it's going to be for a while, I think, Adam.
Yeah, it is. And I'm curious, you know, your guys' thoughts, especially, you know, Tom, just being in the recruiting world, about, you know, when do we get to a point where there's some rules, some level of rules that are put in, or can they be? I was struck by one of the comments in our colleague Pete Thamel's piece yesterday, after the Caleb Williams signing with USC, from Jack Swarbrick, the Notre Dame AD, not the same VP who was called out today by Jimbo Fisher, who basically said this is the only free agency system without any guardrails. Like, there are literally no rules. There was no, the whole transferring and NIL and everything, there's just nothing regulating it. And so how do we get there? Because it's a sport that's so hard to agree on anything, especially something that would apply to everyone. So where is the motivation, and when do we ultimately get there, Tom?
Well, the point, and Tom, the other part of this, to piggyback off what he said, the reason is because it's the only free agency where the people are not paid. They're not employees. Everything else that we talk about, free agency, there's contracts. These are scholarships that, you know, in some ways can be massaged out, taken away. So NIL is the deal. They're not employees. They don't have a union.
And I think for me, what I've watched throughout, as this was first announced that they were allowed to, players were allowed to get NIL deals, they were allowed to profit off their name, image, likeness, is how it's evolved. Because it first started out as what I thought would happen is it was going to start out as influencer marketing deals. You know, the guy, whatever the name of the moving company is, the college hunks hauling junk would give them some deals, which happened. Right. And they would throw out some marketing deals and everybody would be happy. And it would be similar to what we see with social media influencers, where you have a big following. There's a market for that. Social media influencing is a billion-dollar industry, and you'd get market value for that. Well, then we started to see it evolve into what you were talking about, Matt, with funds that were set up with boosters, with alumni. We are seeing it at Miami. There's an attorney who's been working with Drew Rosenhaus. And has set up marketing deals through his company for Miami players. And it's turned into something that it wasn't intended to. And I actually said this a couple of months ago before all of this evolved. I said, just watch. Everything in recruiting is an arms race with coaches. Everything jumps up a level each step by step and goes until it turns into this thing that they didn't really intend it to be. And that's what this has become. It's an arms race now of who can set up the NIL deals. Whose alumni base can set this up to make sure that the players are paid? Florida has a collective now that they just sponsored through the actual athletic department that gives fans a chance to interact with the players, and fans can sign up for a monthly subscription to help fund it. So now you've got fans funding NIL deals for players, and it's not really what it was meant to be, was an actual fair market value deal. And I'm all for players getting paid. If I'm not blaming the players at all in any of this. If there's money out there and people are willing to give them the money, if I were in their shoes, I'd take all of the money. I would take every bit of it. But I think where we talk about guidelines and regulations and where it gets murky for coaches is there are some of them that don't want to get involved with this stuff. They don't know how to set up these funds or get boosters to set up these NIL deals. And how do you fix that? How do you regulate that? I don't know. I can tell you guys, and Adam, I'm sure you've heard the same. I've heard the phrase, the toothpaste is out of the tube, more in the last 6 months than I ever have in my entire life. Because you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Has anyone ever tried to put it back in the tube?
There's probably be a way to do it, right?
My 5-year-old tried this morning with the towel in our bathroom. It did not work. I can tell you that phrase is accurate. It doesn't work.
Toothpaste out of the tube and on the sink and on the towel and on the toilet. Right. It gets everywhere. It's not name, image, likeness. We can call it pay for play. I mean, it's definitely closer to that, but it's not even that. It's like payroll to enroll, right? Like these collectives are just looking for warm bodies. Like if you sign up, you're highly regarded, but if you're an offensive lineman, you sign here, we're going to pay you. We don't care if you perform, right? We don't care. And I say all of that to also say that that's the free market, right? Like we can argue about whether or not it makes us feel uncomfortable. But at the same time, what's the difference between a college athlete who's proven himself and the NFL gives him a ton of money versus college after a high school kid has, you know, gone to a good school or whatever and put on something on tape and has worked out and done his stuff. And now he's getting money before he's, quote, proven anything in college. And you know what's going to change? You know what happened before NIL? The best programs won the most games, got the best players. You know what's going to happen now? The best teams win the most games and get the best players. I just don't see a lot changing. Adam, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you thought that maybe there would be an avenue for programs that were maybe uniquely positioned in a good way for NIL to catch up. And I guess I would be in favor of NIL creating more elite teams at the top that can win national championships. So like meaning USC, if USC needs NIL to get back to being USC, great. If Texas needs NIL to stop, you know, being a joke, great. Because, you know, right now it is a very, very small group of elite programs that have everything behind them to win a national championship. If we could get to be a slightly bigger group of those types of teams, then I think the sport would be better served. And also a more spread out group. USC, Texas, team in the ACC, Miami or Clemson, whoever, a couple more Big Ten teams. I mean, that would be great, is if NIL could in some ways just, you know, enlarge that group of true national championship contenders. But to your point, it's not going to dramatically change who gets the most of the great players year to year.
The most support financially, boosters, whatever, those are the teams that win. Right now, there's geography that plays into that with recruiting at some point, but I mean, there are no borders anymore. I mean, Alabama's pulling kids out of California. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Well, and something specific, what Jimbo Fisher said in that clip that we played, he knows how other people recruit, and he knows how that goes down. That was specific. And I think it was important in what he was talking about, because if we, for some reason, this is tiptoed around, but before NIL and maybe even now, I guess it doesn't need to happen anymore. But before NIL, there were programs that were paying recruits.
What?
And there were alumni.
Hold on a second. You stop that. You shut your mouth right now.
I know.
I'm not going to hear this.
Play the breaking news audio. We have that. But that.
Thank you, Taylor. That was well done. That was awful.
Beautiful. But they were. There were programs that were paying players, and there were programs that weren't paying players. There were people that were doing it by the rules. And so You know, my thought process with all of this and what Jimbo was talking about with that is, you know, you want to complain about us maybe having some NIL deals. I know how you guys did it before, and I know what was happening under the table. Now this is above the table. If you guys want to go down that route, he's got receipts is basically what he was saying. And so to Adam's point, you know, I thought this would help level things out a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit. Alabama's still going to get 5 stars. But if, you know, if there's a local kid that wanted to play for Nebraska or a kid that, you know, maybe late in the process gets an offer from a bigger program and ends up somewhere else because of money or whatever. Now, if Nebraska can offer him an NIL deal or whatever team can offer him an NIL deal and he can go to that school, that's a win for college football in my mind. And I think we've seen a couple instances of that where it can help some of the other programs outside of the top where the rich are still going to stay rich, but maybe some of the other teams get some big names too.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, contracts, paid compensation, employee status, unions. I feel like that's where we're headed. I don't know how long it'll take to get there, but it just feels like we're in some ways we are already there. Before we move on, two things I want to mention. Check out SV Pod with Scott Van Pelt and Stanford Steve. This week, the guys discuss the Bengals and Rams punching their tickets to the Super Bowl, how many college basketball teams could win the national championship, and Scott's rekindled love for Bitto Honey. That's SV Pod every Tuesday morning, wherever you listen to podcasts. And 30 for 30 has a new entry into the award-winning film series. The Tuck Rule examines one of the most controversial plays in sports history. For the first time, Charles Woodson and Tom Brady discuss the call that changed it all. Watch it live February 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, or watch it the next day on ESPN+. ESPN College Football Podcast rolling along here. I want to get to the NIL is kind of connected to the transfer portal. We saw Caleb Williams sign with SC, and people are wondering, oh, is that NIL? Well, I mean, Lincoln Riley went there, and it's a great spot to be, whether it's NIL or NFL. Caleb Williams is certainly on his way. But with Lane Kiffin and his comment, Ole Miss landed 12 commits through the transfer portal, including Jackson Dart, Michael Trigg from USC. Michael Trigg is the tight end, Jackson Dart, the quarterback, running back Zach Evans from TCU, going to Ole Miss as well. He put out a tweet about himself being the portal king and had himself with the Tiger King. It was just a great, great tweet. But then I think he handed the mantle over to Lincoln Riley when Lincoln Riley got Caleb Williams, because he now has 13 commits from the transfer portal there at SC. We had Lincoln Riley on our signing day show on Wednesday. And I said to Lincoln, I said, the portal is good for the players. They can get a new opportunity if they want it. Good for the coaches. They can turn around programs and rosters very, very quickly. But is it good for college football? And I said, what would you change about the portal? Here's the USC head coach.
Obviously, it's changed, you know, really the way that college football operates. And I think at some point we'll have to put in some guardrails, some ways to kind of ensure when this can happen, when it can't happen, so that players, staffs, all that are a little bit more on the same page. Right now it's so open-ended that it's, I think, difficult. I think it's difficult for players, difficult for coaches, difficult to build rosters. You try to project to the future. And then I think kind of the ill effects of that when you start looking down at the high school athlete and how many of these scholarships are actually going to players in high school is concerning. And so I think, you know, so much has changed, and there's a lot of really good people, smart people in college football that care about this sport. And I think, you know, a lot of those people need to get together as we have a chance to assess all that's happened. And I think we can put together a plan that gives everybody the flexibility that they want, but also maintains kind of the integrity of building a roster and being able to use all the different channels to do that in a positive way.
When I and Pete Thamel specifically tweeted out the link to that, you should have seen the mentions from Oklahoma fans. I mean, it is unreal. Just the vitriol back and forth because, you know, he leaves, takes some coaches, there's some recruiting things going on. And then Caleb Williams obviously leaves for SC. Tom, you talk to coaches all the time. You talk to players. What's the biggest concern about the transfer portal right now?
Lincoln alluded to it in that clip. It's roster management, and it's understanding, how many spots they have and who they can get, who's leaving and when, and who's coming, who's able to come in. Because, you know, we talk about this all the time on our recruiting shows. The coaches have to stay under the 85 total scholarship limit, but then also throughout the year, they only have 25 initial counters. And that basically means 25 players that they can bring in each year. That's recruits and that's transfers as well. So now with the early signing period, you've got the coaching carousel that's happening at an odd time where a lot of times it's only giving coaches a few weeks to try to finish off a recruiting class or try to come in and make it to the early signing period. If they've got players that are transferring out right before that, right after that, they don't know how many high school scholarships they have available for those kids. And the high school players don't know how many scholarships are available. So it's putting everybody in this weird bind where I've talked to coaches in the season that were saying, listen, I think we're going to see a large number of players enter the portal. So we're going to save spots in the early signing period. We're not going to sign as many recruits from the high school level that we normally would, because we want to go after the portal. And Lincoln Riley, if you look at his class, it's over half. If you include the transfers and the high school kids, it's over half that are from the transfer portal, which is incredible to look at, that new coaches especially are using the portal, saving scholarship spots for that. And Adam, I don't know how you feel about this, but I've said this on other shows, on radio and TV and elsewhere, but I think if they're going to have some sort of guidelines, what I think needs to happen is there almost needs to be an NFL style schedule to this, where there needs to be a free agency period of you can transfer out and transfer in during this, whatever it is. Let's say it's 1 month after the season ends, you can transfer in, you can transfer out. That's when you can do it. Once that month is over, there's no more transferring. Then coaches know how many scholarships they have. Then you can go to the early signing period. If you were to move that to the beginning of January, the end of December, however you want to do it, have the early signing period. And then I would move the other signing period back to the end of February and just open it up for whenever. You can sign until the spring. Doesn't have to be on the first day, whenever. I think if you did it that way, you give everybody more clarity in what the numbers look like and where each side stands.
The only problem I have, I agree with a lot of what you said, is it's so much of these issues kind of coalesce at the same time. The coaching carousel is always going to be late November into mid to late December. The academic calendar for semester schools is going to start in January and trimester schools. So how do you handle that? If you devote December strictly to the portal, is that giving the high school players their due? And making sure that they're having enough chance to be evaluated or talked to or wooed or whatever verb you want to use before they end up signing. So I think I completely agree that you can't have a transfer portal that's year round. It's just too damaging and it leaves too much uncertainty for the teams, because everyone says, well, the coaches, you know, they're paid a lot. They got to deal with it, but it impacts an entire roster. And it impacts other players and what they might want to do in their future. So I think to have some clarity around the portal period and then making sure that doesn't hurt the end of the recruiting process. I know a lot of these guys are committed much earlier, but if there's, I almost agree with your second point, move everything back. I mean, maybe the first signing day should be February 20th. And I mean, like I remember a lot of college admissions are in April. So why not move that signing day back further and obviously, you know, create a way for some of the guys to still enroll mid-year if they want. But I just think it's too many things, you know, kind of reaching a fever pitch at the same time. And how do you manage all those in a way where you're actually making things better with rules as opposed to making it more confusing?
And I think a big part of this too is the increasing number of players that are entering the portal over the last calendar year. There have been almost 2,000 FBS players alone that have entered the transfer portal. That number is incredible to me. It's too much because there aren't enough scholarships for those players. But if you want to protect those kids too, where the NCAA is always saying this is about the student athletes, this is about the academic side of it as well. A lot of those players that go in the portal, they don't find a home. And what happens to them? Is their education just over now because they wanted to transfer and can't find a spot? There are so many different factors to this too, that I think something needs to be looked at, and something needs to be done. I don't have a lot of faith in the NCAA to change it, but I do agree with Lincoln Riley. There's got to be some kind of guidelines to try to establish some regulations and some protocols and safety measures for both sides.
Toothpaste is out of the tube.
That's right.
I think we have guardrails filled with toothpaste tubes. Like that's the image of college football. Guardrails of just, you know, Colgate and
like bumper bowling, except exactly. With toothpaste.
It's just our kids running along with their hands on the railings, just squeezing all the toothpaste out.
It's great. It's a great image and a horrifying one at that. Roughly 10% of all FBS scholarship players enter the portal. That's a lot. That's a lot of players. And I get the argument too of, hey, you know, you got to stick it out and you got to fight through adversity. I get all that. You also only have 4 or 5 years to figure this thing out. So, you know, you don't want to restrict freedom, but you do need to streamline it in some way. And I said on Wednesday, for every Joe Burrow who transfers and finds glory, number one pick and Heisman and National Championship Super Bowl, there are a dozen Tate Martells who peter out and try and find other spots and want to just hard-headed trying to figure out where they're going to go. And it works out for some. It doesn't work for others. Some players are run off by coaches and some players just run off for greener pasture. Speaking of the transfer portal, Pat Narduzzi was on Sirius XM. I think this was the ACC channel. And the Pitt head coach had this to say about the state of college football, and whether it's NIL or transfer portal. He was asked by Roddy Jones, what is going to push coaches away from college football and perhaps to the NFL?
And, you know, I'll throw it out there. I guess people reached out to Kenny Pickett to go to Notre Dame a year ago. I had no idea. Wow. He didn't say anything to me, which obviously didn't get that serious, but Notre Dame recruited him through the back channels. You know, it's not Brian Kelly, but someone's telling these guys, whoever they are, to come to Notre Dame, right? The tampering, that's going to drive people out of it. When you start losing, if you're a wide receiver coach and you lose your Biletnikoff because you can't pay him enough at a certain school, that becomes a real big issue.
Yeah, he's talking about Jordan Addison. He referenced, hey, you know, someone could say, hey, here's $500,000. You can drive this and come on down south. I mean, he's not really being delicate with what he's saying there, which is there's tampering. And it's been going on for a while, but it's almost like there's a license to tamper because there's the portal. Do you see what I'm getting at, Tom?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And our colleague, Alex Scarborough, wrote a story about this a while back, that tampering is absolutely something that's happening. And I think the difficult part for coaches now is that tampering is also evolving, because it used to be, and still is a little bit, but a lot of times the trainers, the high school trainers or the high school coaches, they would be used as intermediaries, and you could go through them to tell a player, hey, if that guy's not happy here, we got a spot for him, or if he wants to join, we will take him. And so that's the back channels that Pat Narduzzi was talking about. Well, now look at the landscape of college football. Some of these big name kids have agents now. They've got any agents for NIL. I'm going to put that in air quotes. People can't see this, but you guys can, but they have agents for NIL, and it's essentially those agents are just agents. And now coaches could reach out to the agents and say, hey, if this guy's not happy, we've got a spot for him and we can maybe work on an NIL deal. There's new ways to tamper and there's new ways to recruit those players. And that's absolutely a problem. And it's something that coaches are concerned with.
I want to feel good about the sport. And so much around this is like, I wanted the players to have freedom. I understand that the sport got to a point where you couldn't have coaches making the amount of money that they were without the players certainly getting, you know, their cut. And maybe this is just the growing pains of such a major transition that we're going through. And maybe in five, you know, hopefully less, but maybe in 4 or 5 years, there'll be a settling in of what the reality is, and there'll be more of an understanding of how to navigate it on both sides. But this stuff, I guess, just on the heels of realignment, it's hard to feel really good about the future of, you know, hearing, and I guess maybe we hear the coaches as the loudest voices. And but even what you said, Tom, about the number of athletes that are in the transfer portal and the number of those that will not end up in a better situation. And I know, like, you know, as parents, you know, your kids are going to have to make some mistakes, but man, that's a lot of kids that are making mistakes. And man, that's a lot of kids that are maybe leaving schools that where their degree could be like life-changing for a place that you might never get to play and you're worse off. So I struggle with this because I would like, you know, I understand the need for movement. I understand the need for freedom for these players, but I just don't like where it's gotten us at this moment. And I hope that there's some way forward that that the sport can get into a place where we can feel better about it, really for all sides, because I'm not going to stand up here and defend the coaches. They make a ton of money. And this is the reality. You know what? Go to the NFL. There's not that many spots. You know what? You're probably going to be coming back to college because you're paid a truckload of money. But I also don't feel great about where it is from just the chaos of so much movement and so much uncertainty.
We've gone from one extreme to the other, severely restricted, limited to whatever you want. And there's got to be a happy medium. And again, we're talking about tampering. Tampering what? Student athletes that aren't being compensated? Like, you know, the analogy of I can go, you know, one school can talk to the music student who's on scholarship and pull him out, but we treat this completely different. It's big business. It's turning into that. Employee status is coming. And again, the trickle down from the transfer portal to put a bow on the conversation. I was talking to someone who kind of is an expert in the transfer portal and said, last year, there were 500 fewer high school prospects that signed with FBS teams. 500. So this isn't just about college kids maybe not landing on their feet. The trickle down where coaches are using this as a huge part of their recruiting class, where instead of taking their last three, four, five scholarships and taking flyers on high school kids, they're taking them on more finished products or players that are easier to evaluate, guys that are in FCS or Group of Five or even another Power Five. And the kids that are suffering, yeah, maybe the kids that don't find a good opportunity or make a bad decision in college, but it's also the high school kids who aren't getting that chance, who instead of maybe a lower level Power Five are now Group of Five. They were Group of Five, now they're FCS. Adam, it just slides down, the trickle-down effect.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, you can call us old or over the hill or whatever, but like the idea of players developing is great. I'll defend that forever. The idea of a guy developing into a great player, coming in as an 18-year-old and leaving as a 21 or 22-year-old more finished product who's maybe gone through something. And I love those stories. And I know coaches love them. And I just worry that more and more of those are going away. And what you just said, Matt, the opportunity for high, like the fact that there's less opportunities in this sport, that how is that going to serve anything going forward? So I don't know the answer. I mean, I know they kind of had a short-term fix with the replacement spots, but if coaches are more and more focused on the portal to solve their problems, then it's going to continue where more high school players are starting at lower levels and really maybe never getting the chance to develop at major schools into starters and have those great experiences that we all love to write about and talk about.
And what's interesting about that too, though, is there's another side of that where I've talked to coaches about this who have said, think about yourself as a Group of Five coach who you're going to go out and spend the limited resources that you have on recruiting a high school prospect. Let's say you, because a lot of the better evaluators, in my opinion, are the smaller schools because they've got to go out and find the gems. They've got to go out and mine and project for stars. And so let's say you're a smaller school, a coach at a smaller school. You spend your limited resources to go recruit an offensive tackle that's maybe smaller or skinnier and needs to put on some weight. It's a project, but you think he can be a great player. You spend those resources. Then you spend your time over the next 2 years and develop him, and he turns into an all-conference player. What's that kid going to do nowadays? He's going to go transfer to a Power Five program, and you just wasted 2 years to create a farm system for a Power Five school. So I've had coaches tell me, why should I go recruit that kid now when I can go in the portal and get a kid who's leaving Alabama or a Power Five school who maybe it wasn't good enough, but he's good enough to play for us, and I can bring him here, and I don't have to go spend the time on that high school kid. That's I mean, there's two sides of this too, that it's trickling down to where the bigger level kids are maybe going to the smaller schools, but even the smaller schools have concerns about it as well, which I thought was really interesting when you look at how the portal is impacting, really, it's impacting everybody.
And Tom, I'm curious because you talk to a lot of these parents too, and what is their mentality? Why is, you know, what you just described, it's almost like a reflexive response. Like if I get good enough, I'm going to get to transfer. You look at the NFL, and maybe this just is not getting communicated enough. If you watch an NFL game, watch the Super Bowl, watch the NFC Championship this week, look at the introductions. It's not all Ohio State and Alabama and LSU and those types of schools. There are a lot of small schools. If you're good enough, you're going to get discovered. Look at the Senior Bowl that's going on right now in Mobile. So what is the mentality that would allow, again, I just put myself in their shoes, and maybe it's too hard to actually do that, but like, I would not let my kid go and transfer at that point. If you're an all-conference player at a really good school, why do you have to then go into the portal? Why is that almost the response that we expect?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think I would say it's the same reason that we still see specialization, right? We still see parents going out and getting their kid a quarterback coach and making him play quarterback year round at 9 years old. It's because they think they know what's best. And a lot of times, you know, they aren't as in tune to parents and even players and recruits aren't as in tune as what we are or what fans are to what's going on. I mean, I think fans would probably be pretty surprised. When I talk to recruits, a lot of them say, I don't know, I don't really watch college football, or I don't really pay attention to football. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, wait a minute, how does that even work? But I think it's true, and they don't pay attention to that. And so what they see is, one, what we were just talking about with tampering, where if a coach from a big school calls them or calls their go-between and says, hey, I've got a spot for this kid, he can play right away at this big school, that's enticing to them. And that's validating to them too, that a big school wants me. I could go play at the highest level against the highest competition. I can maybe compete for a championship where I can't at this smaller school. I can maybe live out some of my dreams and some of my goals and then make it to the NFL. I agree with you, Adam. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I understand chasing your goal and chasing your dream if you want to win a championship and you want to win at the highest level. But I agree with you. I think now more than ever, you can be found wherever you are. If you're a good player, you'll be found. It just depends on the advice they're given, who's coming after them, and really what they want out of their career.
It's all about for some, it's about the brand. We talk to recruits a lot, all three of us. Remember at Under Armour All-America Week, you know, it's TikTok. It's just different. I hate to say kids these days, but it is. It's kids these days.
We're getting so old on this very podcast. Old. I think we've all grown about 10 years older.
Are we all wearing New Balance shoes right now?
I switched to Saucony the last time I bought shoes. Just for the record.
Okay. Sure, you got your foot wedge in there as well for the arch.
Got to get the support in there.
Let's get that lumbar. All right, let's get out of here with this. Give me the winners of signing day. We haven't really talked about prospects. I mean, who's the big winner? A&M, Oklahoma, what do we got?
Yeah, I'd say Texas A&M is the big winner. I mean, we talked about it earlier. Shamar Stewart, 5-star defensive end. They were able to pull him in. Safety Jacoby Matthews, they pulled him in as well. This class for Jimbo Fisher is incredible. They have the number one defensive tackle, the number two defensive tackle, the number one defensive end, the number two receiver, the number four receiver, the number one pocket passing quarterback. You can go down the list, and the number of prospects ranked in the top five of their position is incredible. What he did in this class, it's going to elevate that team. It's going to help with a lot of the expectations that are there right now. And how they've been recruiting, Matt, you know this stat. If you look back at the winners of the national championship and how they recruit, you have to recruit at a high level. You have to have a top 10 team, a top five recruiting class. Jimbo Fisher has those now. I think this class probably is going to be the class that helps push them up to at least compete to make it into the playoff. And then outside of Texas A&M, I thought Miami did a really nice job today. They were able to get running back Trevante Citizen. They added a couple other prospects. The limited time that staff has had, they just added a defensive coordinator, and we're still able to pull in some recruits. LSU, Brian Kelly was able to get 5-star linebacker Harold Perkins, who committed with you at the Under Armour game to Texas A&M only a few weeks ago. I thought they did a good job. And then really, I think overall, the other team that I was looking at was Oklahoma.
Yeah.
For what Oklahoma has lost in the transfer portal, what Brett Venables and that staff have done, I thought it's pretty commendable. Again, we talk about what other teams have done with combining high school recruits and transfers. Oklahoma should be considered in that vein as well. They pulled in, I believe it was 12 ESPN 300 prospects. They went out and got Dylan Gabriel, the quarterback transfer from UCF. They added in some other big pieces as well. So I thought they were a winner this Wednesday as well.
Yeah, I mean, Top covered it really well there. I would just mention a couple of teams that were under the radar. I mean, Arizona, what Jed Fish has done there, given how bad of a roster that he inherited and how he's been able to improve it, you know, throughout the fall and here even up to early signing day, I think that deserves a bit of a shout out. But certainly, just looking at our class rankings, you're dominated by the SEC. And it's going to be exciting now with A&M. I know that today will be all about Jimbo's comments, but just going through what Tom said about their class, there's just no excuse, right? I mean, Georgia was they were top my underachiever rankings going into the season because they hadn't won a national title in my lifetime. They've changed that. Who's sitting there right at number two? Texas A&M. The time is pretty much now, maybe not this coming season, but Texas A&M needs to make the college football playoff and Texas A&M needs to win a national championship in the near future because they have everything else, whether they have all the money or not. It seems like they have a lot of other resources behind them. And now they have one of the historically great recruiting classes of the recruiting class rankings era.
Would really like to check in with Sliced Bread to see what he thinks about this recruiting class. Honestly, hopefully we will hear from him.
Sliced Bread, reach out. I'm interested to see who he is, who she is, maybe. Who is Sliced Bread?
Yeah. It is.
That's right. That's right. We want to figure this out. Talk to Walter Nolan and Evan Stewart, two of the top players in this class. Talked to them at Under Armour All America Week and in Orlando, and they just said if we're not top five next year, I mean, they're talking next year, it's like it's a disappointment. This Jimbo Fisher did not get paid $75 million in a contract to win the February national championship, right? To win signing day. That's a part of it, that's a huge part of it. But now the pressure's on to deliver, and it feels like this is a class that could bring them to that. And to your point, why does signing day matter? Each of the last 10 national champions have had a four-year average class rank of inside the top 10 leading up to that national championship. We are leading up to the summer and to the college football season. It's going to be here right around the corner. In fact, I'm being told we are 26 weeks away, so it's just half a year away from the end of July, which is when really college football season starts to ramp up. So, Taylor, tell us what we are what we're doing here. It's about the alphabet, which is great. We've got kids. I think we know about this. What do we got?
So we're doing the off-season alphabet here. Just a little consistency on the pod because, you know, we've got a little bit of a mishmash of hosts going on. I'm grateful for you gentlemen for coming on this evening and taking the mantle. It's been a great show. And I know Adam, he's hosting next week. I think we got McGee back in the chair after that. But just for a little bit of consistency, we're working our way down. If people listening to this aren't telling time with their calendar, they'll just know that they're getting closer to the college football season as we progress through the alphabet. So we did A last week. This week, the letter is B, and we've gone on for a while here. So I just want to know, we've talked a lot about bread. What is your all's favorite kind of bread? I've been researching bread while you've been talking. I think I got to go like biscuit or an Italian bread.
You're using brisket as bread? You're
I'm out sorry. Of level. I was thinking, you know, brisket on a biscuit would be lovely, but I meant to say biscuit there.
I put meat in between the brisket and trying to lose weight. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, wheat is always a popular one. I like Italian bread, but you know, maybe some gluten-free, I think, seems to be what seems to be required there if you're having brisket as bread.
Are they going to label this as a senior podcast when they air this? Because I'm about to say that I really enjoy a nice rye bread.
Oh, jeez.
Rye's great.
You know, a country seedless rye bread with roast beef, some yellow peppers, a little cheese on top, some hot sauce on there, some barbecue chips. You've got a nice little sandwich going there. You toast it up just a little bit. You don't want it too hard to where the crust cuts your lips. So you just toast it a little bit. And you're good to go. Rye bread. And then it's versatile. You guys are going to make fun of me for this, but I like a sunny side up egg. I put butter and then grape jelly on the rye toast. And then I dip that into the egg and it's delicious.
What?
Yeah. Mm. It's delicious.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, that's maybe. I was gonna go with like a challah bread and my Jewish ancestors. Nice. I do like a good challah, but sourdough as well. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can do the rye with the jelly and the egg. It might be a new one for me.
Just try it, okay? It's delicious, I promise you. It's going to freak you out because it's going to turn into a Dr. Seuss book. The purple and the yellow is going to make green. You're going to have green eggs and ham. But just trust me, it'll work. It'll be delicious.
Don't tell us what to do. Is that it? Is that the B? That's the B, right? Bread. We tackled it. We finished it. That's it, right?
Yes, unless Tom wants to wax poetic about Tom Brady, but yeah.
Brady.
I think we could end.
Yeah, we got Brady, Joe Burrow. Yeah.
The funny thing about Burrow, I guess we could go out with this. Speaking of recruiting, ESPN 300 quarterback, right? He was pretty highly rated, top 10 dual threat quarterback coming out of high school to Athens. And the story's coming out that, I mean, Nebraska can't get out of this thing, right? Like, because he had his dad played and coached at Nebraska. His brothers played at Nebraska. He wanted to go to Nebraska. Nebraska, Bo Pelini, they said no. I don't know who else they were going after at the time, but they passed on the scholarship. By the time Riley got in there, Mike Riley, the ship had sailed. He'd committed to Ohio State. So then he plays at Ohio State. And then when he enters the portal, he had interest in Nebraska again. And Nebraska chose Adrian Martinez, which at the time, I mean, you didn't know what Joe Burrow was going to be. And even after Martinez's freshman year and Burrow's first year at LSU, you're thinking, oh, this is great. You made the right choice. And then a funny thing happened. Joe Burrow wins a national championship, a Heisman number one pick, and he's going to the Super Bowl, where Adrian Martinez and Nebraska during that time did not go to a bowl. Is that program ever going to? That's one of the big what ifs. I mean, if they take him, he's not a number one pick. The Bengals probably aren't in the Super Bowl. Maybe Ed Ogeron gets fired earlier. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of what ifs there.
Well, what's interesting to me is that Joe Burrow became what he became under Ed Ogeron. I mean, I guess under Joe Brady is really
right.
Another B. There you go.
Another B.
Burrow, Brady, yeah.
Yeah. But if he goes to Nebraska, if he's that type of quarterback, maybe he does. Maybe he turns things around for that program. It is one of the great mysteries. It's one of those what ifs that we've written about those what ifs before. What ifs with there? I mean, there's so many with quarterbacks too. With Justin Fields committed to Penn State, he was one of them. But I look at the uncertainty that have it. Just even with Ohio State, what if Joe Burrow stays at Ohio State? What happens with Dwayne Haskins? I mean, there's so many other what ifs that could play out just with Joe Burrow alone.
Right. Ohio State gets the pass on this because Haskins was setting records. I mean, he was right. Awesome.
Yeah. The first time I met Ryan Day, I spent a day with him in preseason camp in the quarterback room. And the four quarterbacks were JT Barrett, who was the established starter, Joe Burrow, who was clearly number two, Dwayne Haskins, and the aforementioned Tate Martell was also there. And at that time, Burrow was the number two. So, like, I remember going through practice tape, and they were shouting him out, and he had this one great run, and it was like he was the next guy. And then he had some type of injury. I think it was a hand injury in the preseason. Yes. Yes. Haskins leapfrogs him. He plays later that season, and then that was it. And it's just amazing how things can change because, you know, everyone thinks he was sort of a non-factor at Ohio State. No, he was very much in line. He would have been in the mix to replace JT Barrett, but you know, the injury bug didn't help. And then Haskins, like you said, was a really, really good college quarterback. Just obviously not Joe Burrow, as we saw at LSU and now with the Bengals.
If Dwayne Haskins leaves instead of Joe Burrow and he goes to Maryland, does that change the Maryland program? I mean, I love these games. You can go down just a rabbit hole with these.
Let's talk about if Drew Brees passed his physical or Rich Rod took the Bama job. Let's spend an hour on. I mean, it's just all these butterfly effects, right? The what ifs in sports. What if we ended now? I think we should. It's been about an hour, but it's been really fun. Adam, Tom, always fun. Hope we get to do it again. Taylor, Sarah, thanks so much for helping out. And this is the ESPN College Football Podcast. Appreciate you listening. See you next time.
Sliced bread. Call me.